All right, y'all. Well, welcome back to our series called Real. Great job. Yeah. So Real, where we're talking about having like real conversations, like the kind of conversations that we normally, you know, the kind of things that we don't always talk about in church, maybe that we should talk about in church a little more. Things that are real problems right in front of our face and things that, you know, cause us to look around and be like, what's, you know, like, what is happening? But things that come up, things that challenge us, things that may be ordinarily outside of our ability to answer as a Christian. And so the goal for this series is, again, to just be a little different and to talk plainly about some things that need to be talked about more often. And so in review, we talked about real Christianity. We talked about moving from belief to faith and how faith carries action. And so we have to, you know, start acting upon our faith and really going beyond just a head knowledge of it and getting it to our heart. And then last week we talked about a real church. We talked about answering the question of why are you here? Why are you sitting in this room? And is it because, you know, your friends, or is it because your parents made you, or is it because you really want to be a part of church? You really want to be a part of what God is doing in the church. And we talked about some of the reasons that church is important. And just as a cool side note, we actually have started to publish these a little bit. So if you miss one, they're actually going to be in kind of podcast version a little bit on the student website. We actually had a malfunction and we missed the first week, Real Christian, but Real Church is actually up there. So if you want to miss one or check something back out, those are available online. And so you can get a more detailed review there if you want. But today we're going to be starting in James chapter 1. James chapter 1. Today we're asking a very important question. And today we're asking why. Why? And that's a question that you might have answered or you might have asked at some point in your life already. Some of you have already faced maybe loss or hard challenges. Some of you may not have, and you've been very blessed with a very good life, and that's a good thing. That is a blessing. But inevitably, at some point in your life, it's highly likely that you're going to find yourself asking this question. God, why? I don't feel like I deserved that, God. I don't understand, God, why there's evil in this world. God, I don't understand why it seems like the evil people get away with it and I'm the one that gets punished. And so we're going to answer that question today. We're going to talk a little more about that. We're going to talk about some things, you know, like dealing with loss. And we're going to talk about some things about dealing with hardships and challenges. We're going to talk about some trials. And we're going to answer that question and kind of see what God has to say about these tough things. So we're going to read the answer to the question, and we're going to kind of start here, and then we're just going to kind of, this is going to be a little different today. We're going to read this, and then we're going to return to it much later, which is a little bit out of the blue. But James chapter 1, all right, we're going to start in verse 2. James chapter 1, starting in verse 2. It's interesting that James decides to begin his letter with this topic. And so you can imagine that the church that he is writing to is in the midst of some hardship, probably in the midst of some persecution. So it's literally like, hey, y'all, like, I'm James. This is who I am. Welcome, like, to my letter, kind of basically right into this. Verse 2, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask with faith, with no doubting. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in his ways. But let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation, and the rich in his humiliation, because like a flower of the grass he will pass away. For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass, its flowers fall and its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood to the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. Let no one say he is tempted. I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So this is kind of an interesting place to start, and it kind of gives the answer to the question. And I want to start here because I want you to see where we're going to end. And you're going to kind of see where that's the eventual place that we're going to get to, but we have to start somewhere else entirely. And we have to start somewhere, we have to start with a problem, really. Because I think when we talk about trials, we talk about hardship, we talk about grief, loss, pain, the problem stems because in our minds we disconnect the nature of God and the nature of evil. And what I mean by that is we kind of, in our minds, we hear these things like God is all powerful and God is all good, but yet evil exists. And so then we think, well, you know, an all-powerful God could eliminate evil. And an all-good God would eliminate evil. And so yet, evil still exists. So something begins to not compute in our brains of like, okay, is God not all-powerful, or is God not good? Or if we don't break there, we start thinking, well, maybe I deserve this. Maybe the reason that all this bad stuff is coming down on me is because, like, God thinks that I need to be punished for something, and that's equally wrong. Basically, in our brains, something, we just can't compute that. And the reason is because it's not like a logical problem. It's not something that we can just do like a math problem and figure out and make it all make sense. The problem is this affects us on a very emotional level. It is kind of like a lightning bolt that you don't expect, these kinds of problems. Oftentimes we forget about lightning and we let it kind of just, oh, whatever, whatever. Unless you have like a phobia of thunderstorms. So you might be different in this case. But I always kind of like forget about lightning in the back of my head, you know? And like you kind of might hear the thunder rumble. But when that one hits real close, all of a sudden lightning is all you think about, isn't it? For like the next few minutes. Man, like that was right on top of me. That's kind of how these problems are, right? They're never just off in the distance. They always sneak up on you. They always kind of jump you and beat you up quick. And it has a very dislodging effect where all of a sudden we start questioning everything we thought we knew about our faith, everything we thought we knew about God. And all of a sudden we find ourselves finding it real hard to believe in God, maybe. Maybe knowing he's out there, but not believing he's actually going to act in our life and do something amazing and cool. These problems can look like anything. Each person's life is different. And I think we have a bad tendency to compare struggles. You know, we look at somebody along the way and they're like, wow, man, they like lost like all four of their grandparents. Like they felt a lot of loss. They lost a really good friend. They felt a lot of loss. My biggest problem is that I didn't make the basketball team. And we do things like that, and not to say that those are the same, but like if you don't have much experience for loss, I've come to find that whatever your experience for loss is, that hurts almost equally the same. And so what I'm trying to say to you today is that this is a message and a topic that needs to be talked about whether you think you're experiencing real tragedy or not today. Because inevitably you may experience a real tragedy, and you need to hear about this, but on the other side, maybe you're experiencing something and that is the most tragic thing that you've had happen to you, and we need to process this and look at this in the same way. So, in talking about that, in talking about why do bad things happen, why do bad things happen to good people, innocent people, why do the good ones always die young? Why God? The reality of it is, there is not a satisfying answer. And that sucks, to be honest. There's not a satisfying answer. There's not an answer that I could just come up and tell you, and that would fix all of your pain. It would make it all go away. It would make it all right in your world. That's not the case. Grief, heartache, pain, those don't go away in a moment. But we can begin to work through those things. We can begin to, over time, change the way we think about the tragedies, the losses, the misses that we've had in our life. So the first kind of thing that I can offer you is to tell you this, that it is okay to ask why. It is okay to ask why. Now, there are several Bible characters throughout the Bible. I could name you several. David has written several songs, but in the book of Psalms, asking God, why? Why did you do this to me? Why are my enemies surrounding me? God, you promised me a kingdom. Why am I on the run from Saul? There's a man by the name of Job that we'll talk a little bit more about extensively later, who literally had his whole life upended. He lost all of his fortune, all of his animals, all of his sons and daughters, literally his skin and his health went. It was all taken from him, and he was asking God, why? Several people have asked God why. Many prophets ask God why. So I'm telling you here today, it is okay to ask God why. But there is a caveat on that statement, a rider. When we ask God why, and we read about it in James, when we ask God why, we have to do it with faith. In the book of in our verses that we read, it says this: if any of you ask or lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord, for he is double-minded and unstable. So when we ask the question, note that when we go to God and we ask God why, we have to remember who we're talking to. But I want to stop there and I want to ask you an honest question. And an honest question is, does God have a role in bad things? I want you to think about that. Does God have a role in bad things? Because I think sometimes we think that. We look at God and instead of asking, God, help me understand, we say something like, God, why did you do this to me? So I think in our minds, we often think that God has a role in the bad things that happen in our lives. So I want to ask you today, do you believe that? Again, to talk about our man by the name of Job, there's a whole book of the Bible dedicated to the story of this man named Job. And I have to paraphrase it because it's too much to read. But there's something that's really cool, and I'd love for you to go check it out. It's one of the few places in the Bible, in Job chapter 1 and chapter 2, where Satan is kind of mentioned as a physical presence. And what's so cool about these two chapters is that Satan comes into the presence of God. And Satan and God literally have a conversation. And what's so interesting about the language of this, I'd love to read it for y'all. It says this. I have to find it real quick. But essentially it says something along the lines of Job. It talks about a man by the name of Job in chapter 1. And then it skips down to kind of this meeting that's happening. And it says this in verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where have you come?" And Satan answered the Lord, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil." And then Satan goes on to propose, "God, let me mess with him." And it's kind of like a wager is struck in a way. You look again in chapter 2 and it kind of says similar language. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, again, "From where have you come?" He says, "From going to and fro upon the earth." And then God says again, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And then Satan says, "Well, let me mess with him physically." After taking away his friends, his family, his wealth, then he says, "Let me make him sick and attack him with his skin and all." What's so interesting about the language here, though, is that this presents God as always in control. God is always in control. So much so, and this is an interesting thing, it seems as if God has commanded a meeting of all the heavenly beings. And who is also subject to God's command? Satan is also required to report. I think sometimes we don't think that. Even if we get in our minds that it's not God that's actually doing the things to us, we think, "God, why don't you control Satan?" And here we see that. God is controlling Satan. And a lot of people like to look at this story like Job, and they say, well, like, God's having like a gambling game with Job's life here. And that's not what's happening either. When Satan tries to start something, well, yeah, I bet if you let me mess with him, he'll fall, he'll crack, he'll crumble. What we see here is God having enough faith in Job to say, "Bring it on." So when tragedies strike and things come, I think we'd be good to remember this attitude here. That God is having faith in you. That's a bit different. We always think about having faith in God, but have you ever thought about God having faith in you? Having faith in you to trust you, that you will not turn from Him through whatever you're traveling through? You see, God does not cause people to sin. Even in this moment, God is not the one that is causing this. Satan is the one that goes out and does it. Now, God does allow it. But it's because he believes in Job. Again, God does not cause people to sin. In a way, too, even Satan doesn't cause people to sin. Who causes people to sin is people. So, we need to remember that. Remember, it's okay to ask why. We need to remember what God's role in all of this is. That he is not the one that causes the evil. But we also need to remember why evil exists. Who brought evil into this world? Was it Satan? It was not. Satan had already disobeyed God. He'd written his own grave. No one forced Adam and Eve to make the choice that they did. Did Satan influence them? Yes, he did. Does he influence you? Yes, he does. But he does not control you. He does not control anyone in this world. He doesn't have that ability. People sin and they commit evil because they're evil. Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Romans 5:12, therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man and death through sin, this way death came to all people because all sinned. Each of us is responsible for our own sin. The people of this world are responsible for their own sin. And as a result of people sinning, now the effects of the fall have traveled over. Sickness comes about. Death comes about. The physical world has begun to break. It is no longer perfect, and we feel the effects of that. That's where you get your things like cancer. That's where you get your people that walk into crowds of people and just shoot everything up. Y'all, that's just evil people. God is not in that. God wants no part of that either. So, it's okay to ask God why. We need to remember God's role in evil. We need to remember why evil exists. We need to remember God's ways are higher. And that we may not know what God's good reasons are for allowing evil, but it doesn't follow that just because we don't know why, that there isn't a good reason. And again, that's not satisfactory, is it? But at the end of the day, we have to place our faith and our trust in that the reason that God has allowed something like this, this evil in this world, the crazy things that happen, we have to trust that he has a good reason because he is a good God and that he allows evil for a specific reason because he does have the power to stop it. That's where that faith we talked about a couple weeks ago has to come in. That's where belief will fall us short. Is in a moment where the world gets a hold of us and begin to question God. Unless you have that faith to keep walking, to keep going, to keep believing that God has a good plan, belief won't cut it. Now, I say all that to say we don't have any concrete explanations, but there are some great scholars out there, and so here are a possible few of maybe why God does allow evil. And the first one is, God allows evil because he loves us and wants to love and wants us to love him too. That sounds backwards. But the reality is, you could look at it as God could prevent evil, but if he prevents evil, he starts limiting everyone's ability to choose. When you look at the Garden of Eden, and this is, you know, not everybody believes this way, but Baptists do for the most part. When you look at the Garden of Eden, you look at a choice that was given to Adam and Eve. And it was a very simple choice. Eat of anything else, but not of this tree. Why does it seem like God, why would you even put that choice in there? It's the same reason that you want to choose who you get to marry rather than being in an arranged marriage. You want someone to love you because they choose you, not because they just got handed you. God thinks the same way. He wants us to love him because we want to love Him, not because we're robotically engineered to do so. But the reality is, you have to have something else to choose. And so it's choose to love God, choose to love His ways, or choose to go the opposite way. And that's where evil enters the world. That's one possible explanation. Another aspect of that is that God is using the evil that exists to shape us for the better, to develop our souls. Again, going back to our James passage, right? He talks about that. Count it all joy, brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you will be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Right? And then skipping forward again, it says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love Him. Right? So we see this idea that God allows certain things to come our way because He wants to grow us. Again, you got this idea in the back of your mind, like from Job, that God is placing His faith in you. And He says, I think they have this. I believe in my people. And other times, He's teaching us to rely on Him. You have 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and in verse 9 through 13, it says this, we must not put Christ to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction, on whom the end of the age has come. Therefore let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation, He will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. A lot of times we catch half of that verse, and we think, oh, well, God will not tempt me more than I can handle. That's not what the verse says. He will not put it past more than you can endure, and He will provide the escape. Sometimes hard things come our way because we need to learn that we have to depend on God, and is that it's Him who is going to get us through these hard times. Again, it goes back to, do we have faith and action to where we take that next step of reliance on God? Sometimes He may allow challenging things to come our way to further show how much He loves us and cares for us. Romans chapter 8, verse 18 through 27 says this, for I consider the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of Him who subjected it in hope. That creation itself will be free from its bondage to corruption, obtain freedom of the glory of the children of God. Y'all, he's talking about a promise here of heaven. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we are saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope, for hope, for who hopes in what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. Likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. For when we do not know what to pray for as we ought, but the Spirit Himself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words. And He who searches our hearts knows what is the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints, that's you guys, the believers, according to the will of God. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to His purpose. Y'all, that's a beautiful passage on how much God loves us, how much he is walking with us. You ever thought about how, you ever found yourself in a moment, I guess I should say, where you didn't even know what to pray for? Where you had no words, simply. That's where the beauty of a passage like this comes in. When we're so broken and we don't even know what to pray, the Spirit is there interceding on our behalf and groans so deep that words cannot convey. This passage of Scripture just conveys how much God walks with us and loves us through the deepest and darkest times in our lives. Finally, a good explanation for evil may be this: that God is constantly working to turn evil, wrong, tough times into positive outcomes. Romans 8:28. And so, likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. Verse 28. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to His purpose. For those whom He foreknew, He also predestined to be conformed to the image of His Son, in order that He might be the firstborn among the brothers. And those whom He predestined, He also called. And those whom He called, He also justified. And those whom He justified, He also glorified. If you are a believer here today, in this room, God is working to turn your story into something beautiful. Don't hear me say that that's immediate. Your story may be beautiful only when you reach heaven. And that's scary. But stories can become beautiful. The tragedies in your life can be brought to beauty. I hear stories all the time of women who have been abused in their life and yet have remained faithful, and they find faith and they start like support groups for other women and help them find peace and faith. There are groups of veterans out there who have gone through PTSD and are now working with other victims, showing them how faith has helped them to walk through their PTSD. Y'all, your stories, no matter how dark, no matter how awful you think they are, your story can be useful. Your story can become something positive. But where that starts is with you and how you choose to look at your story. Are we choosing to look up and to ask God, God, why me? Why now? Why this? Or are we looking up and hopefully saying, God, show me. God, show me why. Show me how this is useful. God, show me what you're teaching me. That's the real kind of why we need to be asking. Ultimately, and I'll leave you with this, the one thing we can look forward to are the promises of God. In the midst of why, if we have one answer, we have this. We have God's promises. And what He has promised us is that He will watch over us. You have tons of verses. Verses like the verses we've just read. Psalms 23 is another example. The Lord is my shepherd. He promises strength to persevere in trials. He promises grace to grow in Christ. He promises joy. He promises peace. And ultimately, He promises healing, peace, and victory in the second coming of His Son. We may not know why this side of heaven, but we do know our God is good. And we do know that we can trust Him to win that victory in the end. Again, for some of you in this room, that may take a while. For some of you in this room, you've already experienced hurts that I cannot fathom or know. I cannot empathize with you. Some of you have lived rough lives, seen a lot of tragedy. But God knows. And God is there. And He is willing and ready to have a conversation with you. And He's willing and ready to answer your why.